Gutierrez, and I'm joined as always by Jason Just Do It Spoolstra. Jason, what's up, man? It's Friday.
It is Friday, and I just did it. I made it through another week.
You did it.
Yes.
You just did it.
Right now, just did it. I forgot what grade it was. I remember in elementary school, we had to, for a project, make our own island, and we could make it however we want and put whatever we want on. It was kind of a fun project. And I remember I made a Nike island, so the island was the swoosh, and then I had different sports stuff on the island. So, yeah.
Nike Island. Nice. The swoosh, isn't that from Mercury?
Right? I believe so. That sounds right.
Yeah. Like the winged shoe.
So, yeah. But anyways, how are you?
Man, we made it to the end of the week. I can't believe we did it, but yet here we are. Once more. Thankful. Blessed. Jason?
Yes.
I'm so blessed that I'm too blessed to be stressed.
Did you read that off of a bumper sticker?
I have an attitude of gratitude.
Hashtag blessed.
You know who really had an attitude of gratitude, though?
Who's that?
St. John Paul II, whose feast day is today. What? JP2, we love you.
Yes.
So here's the deal.
Todos tuos.
I'm almost 100% sure that this was our saint of the week last week. But guess what? It's going to be the saint of the week again today.
Was it?
Because it's today. And not last week. I mean last year. I meant to say last
year. I was like, I thought it was St. Teresa.
No, last week it was Teresa of Avila. I'm almost 100% sure that it was the same saint of the week last year.
Probably.
But that's all right.
Yeah. He did a lot.
It's today.
Yes.
Today's his day.
Yes.
We can do him again. Absolutely. Jason, what's your second favorite JP2 story? Go.
I don't know if you can see Gabe on video here, but I have a whole row in my bookshelf of nothing but JP2 literature that he's written. And I would say that's probably my second most favorite thing. It's just the proficiency and prolificency. All those words. I can't talk. You guys know what I'm saying. The prolificent.
JP2 is so great. He's got your tongue tied.
Amazing. Prolific, proficient. I can't think of another P word to complete this alliteration.
Pretty.
Pretty awesome writer. Everything from, you know, Catechesis Tridende to the letter to the families to
Evangelium Vitae.
Evangelia Vitae. This little thing called Theology of the Body. You know.
A big.
Don't know if you ever heard of it.
He's got some good stuff, man.
I mean, that's. I don't know if it is, but it definitely should be required reading, or at least like a dedicated class in Catholic schools or Catholic university should be a class on nothing but JP2 literature.
Yes.
With the amount of writing he did.
I think my second favorite JP2 story.
Gabe, what's your second favorite JP2
story? Not my
story?
Favorite. For sure not my favorite.
Your,
but maybe my second favorite.
Penultimate.
I think I just loved his playful attitude. That in the midst of chaos and suffering and pain, that he found joy and was able to bring joy to dark corners. You know, I just with, you know, just the different jokes that he would pull, the pranks he would make, the dressing up in different ways, you know, just to lift the spirits of those he was around. And again, I mean, we're talking oppression, persecution of the church. I mean, some dark times. Poland at that time. Oof. Yeah. Not a great safe place to be. And yet still in the darkness, he's this light. to everyone that encounters him. It's just beautiful. His witness of joy is just really remarkable. And it, the book he wrote, what is it? Crossing the Threshold of Hope?
Mm-hmm.
Or one of the books he wrote.
Which one?
Like, exactly. But, I mean, what a fitting title.
Yep.
Before a man who clearly was filled with so much hope in the resurrection, that was filled with so much hope that in the face of despair. Yeah. It's a big time guy, man. Really thankful for him.
You know what other book I really, really appreciate JP2 having a big part in?
Maybe even promulgating?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Had a pretty big contributing factor to it. It was the Catechism. Mm.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. I think we should dive into it a little bit today.
Let's do it.
Awesome. Okay. So, in honor of Pope St. John Paul II, pray for us.
Pray for us.
We are going to be doing Article 470. We're doing a new Roman numeral, Roman numeral number 4. How is the Son of God man? That's a good question. How is the Son of God man, Gabe?
It's kind of funny because I feel like the last several chapters, or chapters, paragraphs, articles, if you will, when we're touching on the heresies, we're a lot of explaining this ultimate reality. But here, it's the opportunity to deliberately state that there's this union in which the intellect and will is paired with the soul and the body, and somehow it's all God, and he's also all human, right?
Mm-hmm.
This reality that it's these two natures coming together in this divine person, and that everything that Christ is comes from God, just like everything that we are ultimately comes from God, but that does not rob the humanity of humanity. And I love the little quote here from Gaudium et Spes, that the Son of God worked with human hands. He thought with a human mind, right? That he acted with human will, and with the human heart he loved. Just to underscore the humanity of Jesus here in these situations, that yes, he ultimately does come from God, right? That everything he is and is about, it derives its nature from the Trinity, and yet still, he's limited by this body,
mm-hmm.
right? And so in that, is fully human, and sharing in that reality with us, that he's got to work with these hands, that he relies upon a strong heart, that he loves, that he experiences emotions, that he's got a mind just like a human, not just like this supercomputer that's attached to his head, but actually just like one of us. And so just the intimate union there between God and man in the person of Jesus, just it's beautiful. What stood out to you?
Fun fact, of the four main dogmatic constitutions of Vatican II, Gaudium et Spes was the one that JP2, well then Bishop Karawatiwa, had a heavy, heavy fingerprints on and was very intimately involved in the writing of. So again, when you read this, as you're reading the Catechism, we can thank JP2 for this and a lot of these quotes as you're talking about. And, you know, this is where for the next several paragraphs in the next couple of weeks, this is going to get pretty heavy and very dogmatic kind of theology here. So, you know, if it's kind of going over your head a little bit, that's okay. You know, this is so important because, again, as we said last week, if you don't get this right, if you don't fully understand who Jesus is, then everything else falls apart real quick, right? And for me, it was the very first line here in the quote from Gaudium et Spes. because human nature was assumed, not absorbed. Now,
yes.
We talked a little bit about that last week, but they're carrying it on and understanding that it's not the heresy that the Son of God, the second person of the Holy Trinity, absorbed this human body. And so even though he's got skin and he looks like a man, he's God. And there's no, you know, there's no humanity, like you said. It's not God just pushing buttons inside a body and just making it move and, you know, whatever. No, it is assumed. So thus it means, as they say here in this paragraph, that in parallel fashion, she had to recall on each occasion that the Christ's human nature belongs as his own to the divine person of the Son of God who assumed it, right? So they're not in competition with each other. They're not, and they're not equal, right? Like, he's still the divine person. So that's why we say he has two natures, and they run parallel here. It's 100% God, 100% man. Those run parallel. However, his person is divine, and that divine person assumed, not absorbed, his human body. And like you said, because of that, the only limitations is because God put himself in that limitation with his human body. And we'll talk more about that next week, where we've talked about how, you know, God has humbled himself to be obedient in the form of a slave. A slave, yes, to the world, but also to this very body, because, you know, he was a carpenter's son. He sweated and toiled in the brow, just like all of us, and because that's what God promised Adam from the beginning. And so too, the Son of Man assumed that as well.
Yeah, I did love that too. That note there of assumed, not absorbed. Right? And I don't know. Assumed, and I should look it up, but the Blessed Virgin Mary was assumed into heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's this raising up, this elevation, and it's in this union that, like, human nature is elevated. It's raised up to be one with God.
Yes.
And to know that our reality is that's what's waiting for us, to also be assumed, not absorbed, right? To be with God, to be united with him, but not overwhelmed to where we lose ourselves, but to be perfectly in this union. Yeah, we touched on it last week, like you said, but it's just so key. It's so key that in the person of Jesus, just in his personhood, there's so much for us to learn and so much for us to see and so much for us to take hope in.
So we're going to stop there, because the next kind of section of the catechism is four paragraphs, and they kind of fit better. And we didn't want to make this podcast go too long. This episode could go too long today. So we're going to pause there. We'll come back to it next week. And unless if there's anything else you had, Gabe.
No.
Okay. We're
good to go.
Perfect. So we are now.
I got to see what's going on here with Festus and Paul.
Oh, boy. So why don't you take the lead this time? I feel like I always take the lead in the transitions here with Acts of the Apostles.
You got it.
What happened?
Well, and so I said Festus and Paul, but actually we're having this encounter with Agrippa.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you remember Agrippa and
Festus
and
is still sister. Here.
Oh, sure. I mean, well, and it's at Festus's request.
Yes.
That this is even happening. But this is now, Paul has been imprisoned, if you remember, for a couple of years now. It started under Felix. Felix, not wanting to upset the Jews, did not release Paul, but couldn't find a reason to actually condemn him. So he just let him sit. Now there's a new tribunal in town. His name's Festus, it's for the rest of us.
Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. Agrippa, who is a descendant of Herod, the Herod who wanted to talk to Jesus there at the end, comes across and has this fascination. There's something within him that is sparking this interest. And he says, you know what, let me talk to him. And Festus, of course, welcomes it because Paul has appealed to Caesar that instead of being released to Jerusalem, now Festus has to release him to the higher ups. And he's like, but I don't know what to tell him. I feel like I can't just send him over and not say, like, this is what he did. So maybe it's good for you to talk to him to find out. Help me find out what he – you understand this stuff better than I do, Agrippa. Help me find out what's going on here and what he did. And that way I can say something to Caesar as I send him on his way. And that's where we find ourselves now. Here at the beginning of chapter 26, of course, we have the speech in front of Agrippa. We have the reactions of the people around. And then, let's see, that's it. That's the only sections that in my translation that it's broken into.
Mine has Jason? A few more. Yeah, so mine has Paul makes his defense before Agrippa. Paul tells of his conversion. Paul tells of his preaching. And then Paul appeals to Agrippa to believe.
Yes. And all those things did happen.
Yep.
They're just not headlined in my chapter.
So.
Is there a place that you wanted to start, man? Something that jumped out to you? Or we can just do a quick little blow by blow?
I mean, for me, two things real quick. One is, what is this, the third time we've heard Paul's conversion story now?
Yes.
So, you know, becoming very familiar with it, and as well as everyone else in the greater area.
He's got it down, doesn't he? He's got his little elevator speech down.
That's right.
He's good.
Hey, he's got his personal testimony.
If it ain't broke,
don't fix it. But I would say what stood out to me was this last section from verses 24 to the end, where Paul is... Yes, he's fighting for, you know, he's trying to defend himself in the court of law. And, you know, he knows that if he's found guilty, he could be, you know, even be put to death. And he's given his conversion story and all this stuff. And he's like, yeah, this is all fine. But I don't care about that. I care about your soul. And I'm going to win your soul.
I like that too.
I don't care about this court.
Uh-huh. He sees the moment.
Yes.
Right. And sees the opportunity. Like, forget everybody around us. It's just you and me. It's just you and me, Agrippa.
And I love that. In verse 28, and Agrippa said to Paul, in a short time, you think to make me a Christian? And Paul said, whether short or long, I would to God that not only you, but also all who hear me this day might become such as I am, except for these chains.
You can tell he's getting to Agrippa. There's something there that's sparking him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because Agrippa's response isn't like, this is ridiculous, what's wrong with you? But it's, wait, you're trying to make me a Christian? Like, that's a reaction. Paul is making these claims. He's being very intentional and very deliberate, very honestly upfront with Agrippa, and everyone is watching. They're not just watching and listening to what Paul is saying and doing, but they're watching and listening to how Agrippa is going to receive this. And so if Agrippa goes all in, well, that instantly validates Paul. It devalues the arguments against him. And it causes potentially some political strife. So Agrippa sidesteps that question with, it seems kind of quick. But you can tell there's something stirring. Absolutely. That he was shaken with the truth.
But I just love where Paul knows his mission. Paul's going to do what he needs to do. And like he said, maybe 1 hour, 1 day, 1 month, 1 year. Doesn't matter. But it will happen. And either it's going to happen in this life or it's going to happen when you die. But when you die, it's too late. But, oh, you'll know. Oh, you'll know, sir. You'll know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I love that.
What about you?
I also
I was just asking, what about you?
Yeah, I was just going to just to touch one more thing on that piece there. I love how it's not just yeah, I do want you to be Christian. And I want everybody who can hear us. Right? Now where it was once like, okay, forget everybody else, just you and me. Now we're going to bring everybody else back in here. And it's not just you and me. I want them to. But only because what I believe what I say. And I want this goodness, this relationship that can only be had in Christ to be for everyone. For me, I mean, it would be we've talked all that, and it would be important to note that after all of this, Agrippa kind of backs away, but he says, this man's not done anything to deserve death or imprisonment. He sees the innocence of Paul. He admits it, acknowledges it. And then there's that last note, right? Mm-hmm. This man could have been set free if he had not appealed to Caesar. Now, being set free was never in Festus's plan. He was going to be sent to Jerusalem. And so Paul did make the right move, but Agrippa's still saying, yeah, he's done nothing wrong. It's the complete validation of who he is and his mission. I do like how in the opening, Paul appeals to Agrippa's pride. Like he knows exactly how to talk in his respectful way, of course, to the people around him. And so he makes those initial connections there to soften him up as he's now able to tell his story. And I just think sometimes when we're passionate about our faith, we're so excited to lead with our story that we don't actually take the moment to meet the people where they're at. And I know that's something that sometimes gets co-opted in our faith, this idea of accompaniment or meeting people with where they're at. Because what it turns into sometimes is just validating where they're at, mm-hmm. as not wrong. And in doing so, it's validating sin potentially. And so the idea of accompaniment here for Paul is to, like, I appreciate you. I know where you're coming from. And I'm thankful that you're here. And so now I can communicate to you in this way. So he's kind of like buttering him up, meeting him where he's at, but also prepping him to be able to receive the message. And that's huge, right? Like when we talk to people, like we can't just like be a sledgehammer in people's mm-hmm. faces, but we need to take the time to really build that relationship and understand where they're coming from, so that we can help prep that soil to receive the message of the work that God has done for us and for all of mankind. So that was one thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you wouldn't mind, if I just jump on that real quick, I mean,
please do it.
It's to piggyback off that. I mean, same way with Christ, you know, Christ too. I mean, that's who Paul's trying to emulate here. Christ never forced or coerced or threatened or try to, you know, scream at someone to join him. And yes, he did go and eat and drink with sinners and meet them where they're at, like you're saying. But he also said, come follow me. After he's done, like you said, it's not, hey, I'm going to go over there and be with them and then I'm just going to leave them there. Or worse, I'm going to go over there to, you know, to meet them where they're at and then stay there. And then we never move beyond that. Mm. And that's exactly what you're talking about here. So yeah, Paul early on, just, you know, given the due respect and honor of give unto Caesar what's due to Caesar here. And give mm-hmm. unto God what is due to God. So yes, he mm-hmm. gives him the accolades, like you said, because that's his honor and his duty here on earth, what Caesar has given him as an emperor, as a, you know, as a leader here in a judge. But he gives to God what is due to God, which is their souls at the very end, which is awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, great connection there for sure. And then he does go through his conversion story like we touched on, but not all the details, just right. The bullet points.
Right.
And again, just a little, another little note to learn that when we're sharing our story, like recognizing context, audience, timing, location, like we don't have to say every single aspect all the time. We can hit the big points. We can hit the big points and still do it in a way that is holy and reverent and ultimately sharing the good news that God has done for us with other people. But then again, yeah, just getting back to that original thing of like giving it to them in a way that they can receive it and absorb it. So that's what he does here.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's see. And then just finally, Paul knows his stuff. He knows that there was this teaching of the resurrection, that there was this teaching of the Messiah, of the Christ coming back. And so he leans on that in his defense. And he says, I'm not advocating for anything that we haven't already taught, and you know it. So again, the prompting there, the urging of how well do we know our faith? And knowing it well enough to be able to give answer when it's challenged. So yeah.
That's why he's usually the quote unquote patron of apologetics.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. So that is all I have there. Jason, do you have anything else from Acts?
No, sir.
We did it, Jason. We said, let's do it, just do it, and we did it.
Booyah.
We got to the end. Can you believe it?
Do you believe in miracles?
Somehow, some way, my friends. And somehow, some way, my friends, you've stuck around with us. We appreciate it. We appreciate the time that you spend with us each week. Please know that you are in our prayers. And please join us whenever you have a chance over at readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm, where you can jump onto our Discord server. You can leave comments in different places. You can do all kinds of things. But most of all, you can just come hang out with us. Look forward to seeing you each and every time, or talking to you each and every time. And so we can't wait till next time. Until then, love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.